What's in the news today?
With so many stories,
dozens of stories,
we're bound to miss a few.
I'm sorry, did I miss something?
It's In Case We Missed It with the Killer Bees.
And here's the stuff you missed.
All right, every Wednesday, 2 o'clock, all the stories, we just haven't had a chance to get to it. Of course, with the trade deadline, camp opening up, we haven't been able to get to a lot of the stories around the country that we would like to. We'll begin. How about the Dolphins getting levied a penalty? They lose their first-round and third-round draft pick for flirting with not only Tom Brady, because I can understand why you would flirt with Tom Brady. He's a hunk. But also flirting with Sean Payton. The Dolphins get stripped of a first and third rounder.
It's just an awful look. And then when you factor in the Brian Flores side of this and all the things that you know were being mentioned, and they were like, well, conversations like that happen, but if he misconstrued them, it wasn't really like, you know, we were telling him to throw games or we were going to pay him for them. But it's like, why wouldn't you start to believe Brian Flores a little bit more when all this other stuff that was rumored earlier is now starting to come true? And when you look at the way that they've handled everything, the way that it's gone down, I mean, their owner is pretty sleazy.
He's pretty sleazy. He cares about winning.
Yeah, and he does care about winning. So I guess as a fan base, you can say that that's a good thing. But you look at it and you say, look, I think more so than anything else, whatever fine that he got means zero to him. The fact that they lost a first-round pick that is their own pick that has the potential to be a pretty decent pick, that's significant. That next year's a third or fourth round
pick?
Yeah,
third. First and third. So good for the NFL, flexing their power, stripping the Dolphins. Stephen Ross gets busted when he was trying to court Brady and Sean Payton. But they get theirs, which is good for the Texans because one fewer team drafting in the first round. Yeah. The Texans have two of the 31 first-round draft picks. So then maybe if they have the worst record in the NFL, kind of have a third first-round draft pick because they'd be picking 32nd in this year's draft. Pair of legends passing away in the last couple of days. Bill Russell, one of the greatest basketball players of all time. One of the ultimate winner, too. All the championships mm-hmm. he won there in Boston. Always sad to see the passing away of a legend.
You know, he was before my time, but as a broadcaster, his personality was infectious. You know, and you hear the stories about him and Chamberlain. You know, like you said, I mean, look, when you've won 11 championships, doesn't matter what era you did it in. But the fact that I go back to, I think it was at the Hall of Fame, and he had the stage with Mourning and Mutombo and all these big name centers, and he looked at all of them, and then he put his hand kind of to the side, and he whispered to all of them, I'd kick all your asses. I mean, and when Barkley was honoring him, and they showed the camera on him, and he flipped him off, and he didn't feel bad about it. Bill Russell was a special human being, and it wasn't just his basketball abilities. What he went through in a time when the stories that he's told about what he had to deal with as a black basketball player in an NBA and a culture that was not acceptable to black athletes or black people, period. And what he was doing as a human being as well. I mean, it's a huge loss for the NBA.
Yeah. Very, very sad. You hate to see one of the all-time greats, anybody in general,
yes,
pass away. And then yesterday, I was watching the Astros game on DVR yesterday, so I was staying away from Twitter, text, all that sort of stuff. So then I got through the Astro game late last night, around 11 o'clock, went through Twitter and found out that Vin Scully had passed away. And, you know, you were in radio for a very long time, play-by-play, you know, me too. I would buy the MLB app package. Back in the day, you had to buy the package
right
to listen to all the radio broadcasts. I would buy it specifically to listen to Vin Scully call Dodger baseball. So that was, it sucked. It sucked seeing the passing, of course, of Vin Scully, one of the all-time best.
The best way that I can put it is that from my perspective to being in the business and then also hiring play-by-play guys and those kind of, and talent, Vin Scully was never looked at and given the credit to be the talent that he was because he was so darn good at making it feel like it was just you and him having a conversation in
yes
the living room. And that is a skill that is completely lost on a lot of broadcasters today. They want to have their gimmicky catchphrases. They want to. We heard the guy, the minor league baseball guy, that was trying to make everything into a,
oh, yeah,
you know, an analogy from an old school TV show. Vin Scully just let the game be the game that entertains you and added around it. And he was so damn good for so long. When we were talking about in the break, the fact that the guy did the first ever Dodger game in Los Angeles in 1958 and retired after the year 2000 tells you how good he was and how long his career lasted because of it.
There's one thing, too, to be a great and to be humble about it, yep, as well. And, like, whenever he retired, he's like, I've been talking long enough. It's time for me to go. Like, he was just, it seemed, look, never meet your heroes. But it seemed like not only was he the GOAT, the greatest at what he did, but also somebody who was very humble and put his pride aside. And we agreed, the all-time best call for Vin Scully. Listen to that poetry. In a year so improbable, the impossible has happened.
But doesn't sound scripted.
No,
right?
It's off the
forced
cuff.
The forced scripted calls too these days. Even the Buckner call. I mean, when you go call by call, yeah, he never sounds like he forced it on you. It just seemed like it was a conversational.
Have you ever seen the YouTube of somebody put the Vin Scully call that entire inning, and they did the RBI baseball? They had it on RBI Baseball, and they overlapped the voice of Vin Scully calling it. It's one of my favorite things. It's worth the time. Google it on YouTube. I think it's still out there, but it's pretty awesome. Yeah, here's a dribbler to the right side. Oh, it's past Buckner, and the Mets win Game 6, whatever. So rest in peace, Vin Scully and Bill Russell. The Mariners were active at the trade deadline. They made the first big splash of the trade deadline. They traded for Luis Castillo. I don't know how you feel about this, Blankers, but I actually felt like this was a positive for the Houston Astros. Couple reasons why. One, yes, they add a very good player in Luis Castillo, but they're not a threat to the Astros in 2022. Now, Castillo is under club control for next season, and maybe I'm talking out of turn here, but I still don't think the Mariners are competition for the Astros after this year and into 2023. So now Seattle either has to pay Luis Castillo a lot of money to keep him after that, after 2023, or they lost him, never win a division title, and lose a lot of the farm here as well. And then the second point, it took him out of the Juan Soto sweepstakes.
It did. It in a lot of ways, he became next year's Robbie Ray. Because the Astros don't see him anymore this season. Mm-hmm. But Robbie Ray was supposed to be the guy that could go up against Verlander or be the ace to go up against the Astros in the division. And you just you let another guy take another swing. But I'm with you. I thought the fact that couple things in my book. One, it prevented the Yankees from getting him. And they were hot and heavy after him. And two, from a Mariners perspective, it depleted their farm system in a guy that I don't see staying past one more year. So as much as they were adding these young players, Kelenic and J-Rod and these guys, the fact is there's not going to be more help from the troops coming up from the minor leagues because of the fact that they gave up so much to get him.
And let's say you do keep him. Let's say they do keep him. How do we feel about locking up any player into their 30s for big time money? A lot of time it's more damaging than it is good.
And you got to lock up J-Rod at some point. And you think the Mariners wouldn't love to have a Yordan Alvarez type deal for J-Rod if he keeps playing like this?
Yeah, that's not happening. Yordan Alvarez.
What a steal that is going to look like.
I want to fire Yordan Alvarez's agent because I feel bad for Yordan Alvarez, but I feel
you
great.
Aren't wrong.
I feel equally great from a Houston Astro perspective. Deshaun Watson, Lamont called earlier and told us about this. You brought it up a little bit too. How creepy and weird was it that Deshaun Watson was getting mobbed and hounded for autographs at Browns camp? This dude had 20-something sexual misconducts. He settled the cases with them, some dirty, perverted things at best. Trade the first-rounders, $230 million, all of that. And everybody at Browns camp wants this guy's autograph, thinks that he's their hero, thinks that he hung the moon. Very, very sad and pathetic.
Yeah, no, look, I think that you can say that the term fanatic is for a reason, but I think sometimes it's too far. The fact that fans are so worried about the guys that put on the uniform that they love, that they look past what just complete scum this guy really is. And I think that especially the females that are in Cleveland, the females, because I've heard plenty of females, lawyers and analysts and announcers that are just disgusted hand over fist about the fact that this guy got away with as much as he's gotten away with, and now you're seeing this outpouring of unbelievable support and love for this guy because he could be the savior on the football field. It doesn't take away he's a piece of you-know-what off the field. And as Lamont said, he pulled the wool over everybody's eyes. He had everybody believing that he was this Cinderella story choir boy, squeaky clean. And boy, were we wrong.
Sociopaths do. They're able to fool you. We're deep down. They're deepest of secrets. They're terrible human beings, which is what Deshaun Watson is. This Florida man, I could just end the conversation there. This Florida man was driving a scooter at Walmart. Story can only get better, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was drunk. He was intoxicated. Caused some damages. He's facing a DUI for driving a scooter in Walmart while drunk.
I mean, first and foremost, you're right. Everything that's just completely whacked out people seems to happen in Florida. But the fact that dude was chasing down customers and trying to run them over with a scooter, and you, first of all, I wasn't aware of the fact that you could get a DUI in a Walmart, not on like a sidewalk or a road. But I mean, I don't know. I think DUI might be too much. But
probably had a drive there.
But you didn't catch him on the road.
Yeah,
catch him because he was reported for driving a scooter.
I feel like if he hired Tony Busby or Rusty Hart, and he can get out of this. Like driving a scooter while drunk is leading to a DUI. I don't know. Like you could probably get him for like public intoxication.
Right. That's exactly right.
Like vandalism for damaging a lot of the stuff at the Walmart. But the DUI charge, I think a good lawyer gets you off of it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Because that's what I'm saying. DUI to me is driving like on a public street or sidewalk or highway. Not in a Walmart aisle 5 looking for a special.
Are the Killer Bees normalizing DUI on a scooter at Walmart? Is that okay? 713-780-ESPN.
Did he use his turn signal?
I don't know.
Did he stay in his lane?
I don't know a whole lot about scooters.
Those little sit down with the little basket in front, those little kind of motorized.
I know what they are. I don't know if they have blinkers or rear view mirrors. Is it okay for
There's
a pregnant
rear view
woman?
Mirror. Side view, maybe.
Is it okay for a pregnant woman to use a scooter at a Walmart or grocery store?
It's not okay for people that aren't physically limited to be driving one, and people do that in the grocery store.
Where do you draw the line?
God, I've had a tough day. I don't feel like grocery shop. Where's one of them scooters?
I mean, if they're in use, if there's 10 of them, if you're not taken away from somebody else.
My ass is killing me. I'm going to drive a scooter around to get my steak and potatoes.
I wouldn't mind doing it. 713-780-ESPN. Can the Astros catch the Yankees? ESPN's at it again. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Somebody texting in 0446 saying that as a Browns fan who was against the trade for Deshaun Watson, pump the brakes on criticizing Browns fans. You know as well as I do, the scene would have been the same in any NFL training camp. Okay, maybe we'll take back and walk back the Browns fan thing.
Why? They were Browns fans. They were all over him, clamoring all over him for autographs and all the other stuff.
But I want to double down on the people that were around Deshaun Watson. Like, you have all these people clamoring around a borderline criminal. I shouldn't have said that. Just hounding for his autograph. I didn't see any of the women there, though, by the way.
I was going to say, a dirty, dirty dude, and you're supposed to take it easy on Brown fans? It's you, your ownership group, and everybody that's accepting this guy and thinking he's a hero and literally hoping he turns out to be your football hero for all the crap that he's done off the field.
I think the fair pushback is that any fan base who had Watson as their guy would probably feel that way.
He did say that. The texter did.
It's Lenny and his
maybe
and his
you think
kid out.
You think every fan base would have done that?
Absolutely. Without a shadow of a doubt.
Okay.
I get it's a little bit different here because you went through all of it, but I think if he was traded to any other team, that's the way it would have gone.
I mean, Michael Vick, whenever he came back with Philly, I mean, you had protesters at
I was gonna say you had picketers and protesters all over the place, and there was a totally different vibe than like going all over crazy about him.
I mean, I don't want to get into my thoughts on that too deeply.
Sure.
But I would imagine there were also fans there who were super pro-Vic still.
Sure, sure. Careful how you say that. 0446 said Ben Roethlisberger did something just as bad or worse.
Mm.
I don't want to have that conversation. I would say like you just did. But he said he still got love as a quarterback in Pittsburgh. Nobody talks about that. Disagree. Everybody mentions that when you talk about Ben Roethlisberger. People talk about Ben Roethlisberger when they looked at Deshaun Watson and his sexual misconduct stuff.
I agree with that texter.
No way. No, that follows Ben forever.
It's an indelible mark that will never go away, just like what Deshaun has. Now, from a perspective of if they have success on the field, is there a bunch of people that are just going to... It's like Kobe. I mean, everybody still remembers that Kobe had an incident in Colorado.
Kobe gets off the hook way more than Big Ben does.
He sure, but like it was completely as much as anybody could have ever hoped. If you're that guy, that it would be forgotten. Kobe's was forgotten.
Yeah. I think Ben Roethlisberger comes up as a whataboutism. I don't think for the last 10 years or however long it's been since then, that when people talk about Ben Roethlisberger, that that's typically been front of mind. It became front of mind again because of the Watson situation.
Well, okay, front of mind, you might semantic assess there, but like it's still brought up when you mention the name Ben Roethlisberger. Just like it'll always be brought up that Deshaun Watson had this in his past.
There was more than one case, was there not? Because there was one in Tahoe.
I think there was two.
Yeah, there was two total.
One in the bathroom?
Yeah.
That was different than the one in Tahoe, right?
I believe
Yeah,
so.
I think there was two.
To be clear, I'm not saying this is the way it should be handled, but typically speaking, and I think it will be the same with Watson eventually, we stop talking about these things.
I think your front of mind is the best way to say it. Because if Deshaun Watson goes out the second half of this year, plays great, next year MVP caliber quarterback Browns go to the playoffs, that becomes the conversation more than the 20-something sexual misconduct cases. But I still very much think it's in the Deshaun Watson
Michael
conversation.
Michael Vick will never outlive the dogfighting thing.
Mike Tyson.
Like, we are having two different conversations here because I remember watching Vic and talking about Vic and absolutely dropping the dogfighting thing. I get that it was there in the background,
sure,
but it's not the conversation we were actively having.
Yeah, that's why I think front of mind is a great way to put it.
But because I also said, regardless, they're never going to outlive it. It's always going to follow them around and be in the conversation.
I don't think it will be in the conversation. I think it will be back of mind. Okay. I agree with that. I'm not saying, see, there are moments where it comes back up. We're talking about Ben Roethlisberger again because of Deshaun Watson. Prior to the Watson stuff, I hadn't had that conversation about Ben Roethlisberger in 10 years.
I had that conversation like yesterday, if I'm being completely honest.
Well, he's also to his point. That's because Deshaun's still top of mind in everybody's conversation.
And it was in relation to a Deshaun Watson remark. But I feel like there's always going to be like the snide comment about Deshaun. Because, like, anytime Ben Roethlisberger gets brought up, okay, you have a snide comment potentially. Mike Tyson, snide comment potentially. I think the same thing with Deshaun. There's always going to be a snide comment potentially.
There are moments occasionally where it comes up, but it is very rare, I think, once you get removed from it a couple years.
And it also, not only removed, but to the level that you're playing at.
Sure.
Like, Mike Tyson was, again, the heavyweight champion of the world. Kobe Bryant was Kobe Bryant. Ben Roethlisberger had some runs in the playoffs. We think Deshaun Watson's going to be good. So, like, your play on the field can help overshadow the misconduct that you had off
the
field.
There's no doubt. If he plays his tail off, that it's going to be a very quick and speedy back of mind.
Mm-hmm.
If he plays like Baker Mayfield or somewhere in that realm, people are going to go nuts on it at a certain point.
Look at Ray Lewis. I mean, Ray Lewis got didn't get convicted. He was alleged to have killed somebody. And
no, an accomplice to the murder.
An accomplice to murder?
I believe.
Okay. He didn't get charged.
Yes.
Burned his clothes, all of that. And like he was so good at football that like that was back of mind. But you still have the snide comment. He killed somebody.
But how often do we talk about Tyreek Hill? How often do we talk at this point about...
I say quite a bit. Like a snide comment, I say quite a bit.
Yeah, I guess we just live in different worlds interaction-wise.
Well, we said Deshaun
in
the
towels. That way.
Massage, towels, all these things are going to follow him around.
You allude to it in some form or fashion. Like it might not be the most important thing or the topic of conversation, but it's like, okay, that's the back burner? Yeah, Tyreek Hill punched his girlfriend.
It might not be an ESPYs monologue, but it's going to be...
Unless it's Norm MacDonald, then it probably will be.
Well, but Norm's passed, so... Yeah.
and the ESPYs have passed.
Indeed they have.
713-780-ESPN. Can the Astros catch the Yankees now? Yeah, that was a write-up on ESPN+. Plus. After the Major League Baseball trade deadline, they did their winners, they did their losers, all of that stuff. And a gentleman by the name of Bradford Doolittle, not a killer bee, he had
not a relief pitcher for the Nationals and the A's?
No, not Sean. This is Bradford. Could be related. I guess I don't know. I really have no idea. But the New York Yankees, he has, can anyone catch them now? And look, I know that the Yankees were active. I know that they made a lot of trades at the deadline. The Benintendi, they made the trade with the A's, bringing in Montas, and they also traded for their closer, the A's closer, Trevino. Yeah. They made the weird trade yesterday that you brought up, bringing in Harrison Bader for Jordan Montgomery, who has a great changeup. But to say, can anyone catch them now? Like the Astros don't exist.
It sounds like
they've
been the leader in the clubhouse the whole year, instead of the fact that secretly and not so secretly, including from Michael Kay, their TV guy, they know that the Astros are the team that they are concerned with. They know that the Astros don't fear them. They know that the Astros took them to the woodshed and should have swept them in the entire season series, if not for two Aaron Judge heroic events where the bullpen gave up the runs, not your starting
and
pitching, and they did enough to win. So slow your roll with the fact that you're looking for clicks on a national site by saying, can the Astros catch the Yankees? The proper headline should be, did the Yankees do enough to compete with the Astros? Because that should be the legitimate question if you take into consideration everything I said and the fact that who's daddy over the last 5 years. It's pretty much weighted in one favor, and it has nothing to do with pinstripes. It has everything to do with blue and orange.
Do you think the Yankees did enough to catch the Astros?
I think the Yankees did enough to compete with the Astros. I don't think they did anything that put them head and shoulders above the Astros.
If they play in the ALCS, I said this the other day, and I still firmly believe it, I think it's a coin flip. I think the Astros and the
Yankees.
Which
is exactly what you want.
Yeah, I think it's 1A, 1B in the American League. I think that I don't think one team's better than the other. I think even though the Astros took 5-7 against the Yankees, okay, Astros have scoreboard head-to-head. Yankees have scoreboard with the overall record. I think it'd be a coin flip. I think it'd be a great series between the two. Ultimately, I really do want to see it.
Well, and the records aren't over yet as they continue to compete, and the Astros schedule is easier. And then on top of that, when you think about it, you can't get over the hump until you beat the team that's been basically the roadblock from getting you to the mountaintop.
Exactly.
So, you know what? They've been there, done that, and did it to you. Now, until you do it to them, I don't think that anybody should say the Yankees have a leg up on the Astros.
Can anyone catch them now, referring to the Yankees? 713-780-ESPN. What do you think of Bradford Doolittle?
I think in the thought process
he should do
for
more.
Writing that column, he did very little.
713-780-3776. The headline they had for the Astros, almost a complete set. Okay, I'll live with that because center field is still a hole for this team, and that's frustrating. But his write-up of the Astros, it caught my eye, and it shows you that he didn't do much homework either. Houston made an even meatier pickup by acquiring Trey Mancini from the Orioles, covering them in case Yuli Gurriel doesn't get going or Michael Brantley can't get healthy. Okay, the latter, true. Michael Brantley's hurt. We don't know when he's coming back. But the in case Yuli Gurriel doesn't get going.
Have you seen his last month plus?
Hitting over 300.
Yeah.
Hitting over 300.
And we've said very clearly, don't expect Bregman or Yuli at the end of the year to hit 300 because they already dug themselves too deep a hole to start the season. But when you look at just their last month and a half, you realize that if you did it in a full season, they'd be right where they should be.
I still think I want that two seed. You get Minnesota and Seattle instead of Toronto, Tampa Bay.
Minnesota desperately tried to make some moves, tried to bolster their rotation and their pitching. But yeah, I don't see enough that either Seattle and Minnesota don't scare me at all. I told you, I think the third team in the mix in the American League is Toronto. And if Toronto, Tampa Bay, and the Yankees are all on that side, perfect.
Path of least resistance. Give me the two seed. 713-780-ESPN. Can anyone catch them now in reference to the Yankees? 713-780-3776. We just talked about that center field spot. Because I think that the fact that talking about the Astros, almost a complete set, the only thing that's not complete, in my opinion, is center field. Do you think that there is an internal option for the Astros in center field if it's not Jake Myers? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to get you guys caught up with the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I've been telling you about them for Dr. O knows what he's doing, and his staff does too. And the fact is, if you go to Apollo Men's Health, both men and women, it starts with hormone therapy. If you don't have enough energy in your life and you want more energy on a daily basis to be able to do the things that you need to do from work to the family, to working out, or whatever else you have on your list of things to get done, then you go see the people at Apollo Men's Health because they put you on a plan that works. They get you results. They get you feeling like you want to feel again. Even though you thought those days might have been behind you, they're not. They're in your windshield, and they are looking better on a daily basis because of the people at Apollo Men's Health. Go to apollomh.com right now. Find out all the different ways that they have services that can help you. Then book your first appointment. When you do, you'll find out most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. But go in and be honest and open when they ask you the tough questions. When they tell you what you're trying to achieve, tell them your goals. Tell them where you want to get to. They'll put you on a path that works. They're going to get you a plan that's going to be set in stone, and they're going to get you those results. They can do it, people. They've did it for me. They can do it for so many other people like you. I see them in the lobby every single week when I go there. Check them out today. They're good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting InnovationMap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map.
independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Astros didn't trade for a center fielder. I think that's the content of most people who are a little bit frustrated with the Astros dead at the deadline. Like, I think it's a great idea. I think the fact that you have Jose Urquidy and Trey Mancini on this team instead of Josh Bell and Jose Siri is a huge plus for the Houston Astros. They get started at 3:05 today, wink, wink. Anyways, the Sean Doolittle guy, Bradford Doolittle guy,
yep,
that wrote this, you know, winners, losers at the deadline, called the Astros almost a complete set. Okay, fine. I'll agree with that because of what the Astros are rolling out at center field. Jake Meyers is still the everyday center fielder of this team. Against a lefty, you might see Mauricio Dubon every now and then. Chaz McCormick has only started one game in center field since the return of Jake Meyers. So it seems like the Astros don't even view Chaz McCormick as a center fielder. They view him as an emergency center fielder. What do you think are some realistic options the rest of the way in center field for the Houston Astros?
Well, I think you should start because I think you had the best idea and you put it on Twitter last night, I think it was. And I think it makes a lot of sense to me because it is a recipe.
Two.
Well, I think Leon is a guy that they should consider. I think that the same way that, and I know James Click is enamored with Jake Meyers, and I'm not saying that he shouldn't be for the future.
Loves him.
Right? Because every single time we point out the fact that every time Click gets a chance to talk, he makes it very clear that his center fielder of the future is Jake Meyers, and he is in their plans, and all kinds of quotes like that. But if you got a guy hitting it like Leon is hitting it, and you know that there's not a scouting report on him yet from a major league pitcher's perspective, and you know that he can do at least a solid job in center field, and you have at least some question marks in terms of how Kyle Tucker could cover the ground if he had to be your center fielder. Again, just like we were talking about with pitchers and other players, why wouldn't you, in the month of September, and maybe earlier than that, bring him up and give him a chance to see what he can do in center field. Because if he proves that he's got the tools to play it defensively, mm-hmm, and he can hit anywhere close to what he's been tearing it up in AAA at, he could be your answer, and you don't have to worry about the fact you'd make a trade for a center fielder.
Listen to the Click. The tea leaves tell me that he's not going to be an Astro in 2022. And the overall numbers this year down in Sugarland, you know, .233 average. He gets on base quite a bit, though, and he's got some pop.
He does have some pop.
But he's been a lot better lately. And Astro, the reason that and you're talking about the quote tweet that I had for Astros Future, at Astros Future on Twitter, does a great job with the Astros minor league system. If you're interested in that sort of thing, I would suggest giving them a follow. But they mentioned how he's heating up. Pedro Leon is 14 home runs, 32 stolen bases on the year, making him one of the three AAA players with at least 10 homers, 30 stolen bases. So he's kind of got a unique skill set. But he's been heating up in July. He finished July third in the Pacific Coast League with a .435 on base percentage. I love guys who get on base. I think it's one of the best things you can do as an offensive player. Because if you get on base, you're not making an out. Last time I checked, they count outs in baseball, and you get 27 of them per game. So I love on-base guys. So Pedro Leon intrigues me from that front. If you consider last year's trade deadline, they traded Miles Straw. Who in the world's going to play center field? Curveball. It's Jake Meyers. So, like, I don't think that Pedro Leon's going to be given a shot this year, but I went from 0% chance to where now I'm not completely ruling it out.
And I kind of like it. Again, it's not saying you have to start him there in the playoffs, but at least because we keep talking about the fact that they have such a unique position, and even Click was talking about it. I mean, the fact that, you know, he said because you're so far up in the division, and he kept wanting to knock on wood every time he used the quote, but to say that they're going to be playing October baseball, but you have a luxury not many teams do. So why not use it to your advantage and audition everybody? If you want to audition Leon and center field, just like you're going to be auditioning Lance McCullers, and you're going to be auditioning Vasquez and Maldi for who's going to be the starting catcher, why not figure it out and see if the kid can play? And if he can, and pitchers can't get him out, or at least he can be serviceable hitting the ball, give him a chance.
Here's another idea if you could do it from what you have, because you have no other options. The street free agents aren't going to start center field for you. Obviously, Dusty and James Click are going with Jake Meyers to be the guy. You'll see Dubon, because he hits lefties well, plays a pretty good center field. Chaz McCormick doesn't appear to be an option. One start in center field since the return of Jake Meyers. Last year in the World Series, Kyle Tucker played three straight games in center field. In fact, Kyle Tucker started more games in center field than Jose Siri, than Chaz McCormick, and then, of course, Jake Meyers got hurt. Scrap iron. Phil Garner, former manager of the Houston Astros, he was on the bench earlier today. He had an idea about Kyle Tucker potentially playing center field.
But in terms of his defense, I don't have a problem putting center field. I think he's an exceptional player. But I also think you got to keep the DH slot open a little bit because you got to rotate Alvarez out of that spot once in a while. For me, Alvarez is playing well in left field, but you want to get him off his feet a couple of times a week and give him that DH slot. So, I could see a lot of changes happen in the outfield.
That was Scrap Iron, Phil Garner, who 3403 just texted in and said, if you've managed with Biggio and Berkman in center field before, how bad can Tucker be? That's a great point.
That's a good point, yeah.
Now, James Click was asked about this when he was meeting with the media yesterday, and he like threw a lot of reasons why they don't want to do it, but he didn't say no. And if you want to run out like an all-offensive lineup, not saying you're doing this every single day, maybe you do it with the ground ball pitchers like Framber Valdez, don't need outfielders, is important because you have ground ball pitchers, you could potentially run out an outfield, Kyle Tucker in center, Trey Mancini play some right field, and then left field, okay, well, you can go with either Diaz, you can go with Yordan. If Brantley's back, you can go with Brantley. That's your best offensive outfield. You're giving up something defensively, but by far the best offensive outfield you can run out there.
And I'm going to sound like a broken record, but just like you might want to try Leon in center field, utilize the lead, the schedule, and the rest of the regular season to figure out if Kyle Tucker, because Kyle Tucker's got to feel comfortable. Right? He's already scuffling right now at the plate. Mm-hmm. The last thing you need to do is have too much on his plate and on his shoulders, because now he's being required to play a position that he really doesn't feel comfortable playing, and he's still trying to figure out getting back in his swing offensively. But use some of those games to do those kind of things. Look, the Yankees did this, and because of a necessity more than anything else, they put Aaron Judge in center field. I don't know that Aaron Judge ever felt completely comfortable or liked the fact that he did it, but he did it for the sake of the team. But they also had a big lead, so they could afford to do it. You can take a page out of their book and say, I'm going to try Kyle Tucker there. And periodically, or at least for maybe a straight couple of games or a series, check him out in center field, see if he's capable and he likes it and he's okay with it.
Right.
And then see if it's something you can consider for the playoffs.
Aaron Judge is a travesty defensively in center field, but it kind of helped out their outfield configuration.
They had
getting
to do
some
it,
bats in
Gallo
the lineup.
Was miserable.
Yeah, they were losing a couple
Hicks
runs.
Is terrible. Yeah.
They were losing runs having Judge out there defensively, but they're gaining runs offensively. It'd be the same thing for the Houston Astros. And some of the advanced numbers on Tucker, the small sample size he's had in center field, they're not good. In fact, they're probably below average, but they're better than Aaron Judge. So now it's a conversation of how many runs are you adding versus how many runs you're saving. And it doesn't have to be every day, because you can kind of fudge the numbers a bit. Framber Valdez has like 80% ground ball rate. I'm being a little bit egregious there. I'm being he leads the league.
Yep.
So if you have Frommer's getting a bunch of ground balls, you don't need defensive outfielders as much as you do when Justin Verlander's on the mound, who's a fly ball pitcher. So you can do it some days. And I like your point too. Okay, you got a runway here of 162 games of the season. You need to see what your team's going to be in the playoffs. If Jake Meyers continues to play like Jake Meyers is now, that's a black hole in the lineup. Like, he's giving you nothing. I don't think he's healthy. So see what Tucker looks like out there. See if you can get away losing something defensively because of what you're adding offensively. Leon's challenging because now you're starting his clock, and how much do you value starting his clock versus playing every other day? But hey, maybe worth a shot if you're trying to win a World Series.
If we're auditioning him just for the sake of auditioning him and this team doesn't have aspirations of winning a World Series, I'd say I understand not starting his clock. If because the trade deadline has passed, but you still have an option that might be better off for you than what you currently are considering, you bring him up, you give him a shot, and you see what you got, and you deal, just like Click said, what Crane wanted and what they talked about previous to the deadline. He said, we'll worry about the future later. Do what's best for this team for right now. If for what's best for this team right now, they figure out is bringing up Leon and giving him a shot, and he can figure it out, then do what you need to do and worry about having that team control weakened a little bit. I don't care.
Right. See, like Dr. Dre says, no way I would call up Leon right now, which I normally wouldn't either. Like, I wouldn't suggest this, but you have a dude in center field that's giving you nothing offensively. Nothing.
Are you going to do it in September for September call-ups?
So you only get two September call-ups, so I'm intrigued to see how he uses those two
September call-ups. I would think it's Hunter Brown and either Leon or Lee.
I don't know. Lee makes sense because they like to carry a third catcher,
yep,
especially if you're making late-inning substitutions.
Stubbs used to be that guy.
Yeah, if you're making late-inning substitutions for Vasquez from Maldonado, you don't want to run the risk of Vasquez getting hurt and all of a sudden you have to pull him from a game and you don't have an emergency catcher. So probably a third catcher, probably an arm. Like, I don't know if you want to start the clock on Hunter Brown to be your mop-up reliever. Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
But you also, like I said, I don't want him to just be mop-up. I want to give him some major league starts because we've heard the debate of whether he can be or can't be a starting pitcher, depending on who you talk to. And Keith Law was one of those guys that said he's going to end up being a bullpen guy. I need to know. Yeah. I want to see what he can do against major league hitting.
The role influences whether you run the risk of starting the clock. If Hunter Brown's going to make a couple of starts, it's worth the risk of starting the clock. If he's your mop-up reliever, it's not.
Right.
If Pedro Leon's going to get some starts in center field, it makes sense to start his clock. If he's just going to be a pinch runner in the ninth inning, it doesn't make sense to start his clock. So it depends on how you envision them in
we're
September.
Only talking about Jake Meyers right now, but let's also remember when they did this, what they did, they brought up Siri when they found kind of lightning in a bottle with him,
yeah,
and he ended up making the playoff roster and being a pinch hitter and then eventually a more everyday type player that we never saw coming.
He hit fifth in the lineup yesterday for Tampa Bay.
He made a catch already.
Brilliant catch. Yeah, the dude's a gold glove level center fielder.
No, I'm never questioning his defense.
No, but he can't hit a lick, and all of a sudden he's batting fifth for the Tampa Bay Rays, who would be a playoff team if the season ended right now. 713-780-ESPN.
And I hope they win their first round.
780-3776. Me too. We'll talk to one of the Wheelhouse men when we return. We know it won't be Jake Asman. He's up in New York. We're going to get the idea of pass or fail for the Astros at the deadline and one conviction for the Houston Texans in the state of their organization. One conviction that I love is Gentle Ben. Vodka, gin, bourbon, they're all things I have tons of conviction over. And a local Texas brand, Gentle Ben Spirits, does it better than anybody else. Gentle Ben, a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits using their state-of-the-art, innovative Percedo craft technology that's better in purity, aroma, and taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification, Gentle Ben, unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip, compare it to your brand. You're going to taste the same difference that I did when Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Ben Spirits, A&M class of 85, had me out to the tasting room in Alvin to see what I thought. And ever since then, I've been a Gentle Ben man. It is smooth. It is clean. It eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. That makes no sense. You can find Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin at Total Wine and Specs. Also online at gentleben.com. If you're over in the Pearland area, swing by Broadway Liquor. They carry Gentle Ben. Also, if you're at Minute Maid Park, you're in the Diamond Seats. They have Gentle Ben there. Also, if you're looking for the bourbon, though, you got to head to the Tasting Room in Alvin. It's the only place that carries the bourbon. It is fantastic. 94-proof bourbon, winner of the double platinum at the Ascot Awards. Head out to the Tasting Room in Alvin. Get that thing a shot. Also, fantasy football season. Brendan's played in like 200 fantasy football leagues. If you're looking for a place to host your fantasy football party, why wouldn't you go to the Gentle Ben Tasting Room? It is a fantastic place to do it. And it also class up your league a bit while you're enjoying the great spirits of Gentle Ben. Gentle Ben, the union of tradition and invention.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Brad Kellner, the real BK, joining us now. That is Jose Urquidy on the mound. That's the Jose Urquidy theme music that we always play whenever Jose Urquidy's on the mound. I'm curious to see what he can do today. He's been fantastic.
Like he is going to push.
First pitch at 7:05 today. But he's been fantastic for a while now, ever since he ditched the cutter. I'm glad they didn't trade him. But we'll see what he does today against a Boston Red Sox lineup. Christian Vasquez maybe will catch against his former team.
I'm just feeling a certain way that maybe Mancini's going yard today.
I hope so. That'd be interesting.
What a story. And it would even be better if he blasts one and it would have gotten out of every park but Camden Yards. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
7:05, first pitch, though. You can listen to them after you listen to the Wheelhouse.
I'll tell you what, guys. After those two pinch hit appearances last night, I was ready for trade backs. I didn't want Trey Mancini. I don't want Christian Vasquez.
Use them, and I hated the fact that he pinch hit them both in the ninth.
Yeah, what a tough situation for those guys. Hey, first at bat on your new team. It's in the ninth inning. Down one. Run.
Yeah, down one in the ninth. Go get them, boys.
Mm-hmm. I hated that, too. Like, I wanted to use them as a pinch hitter in that game, but only if it was a blowout. Like, okay, give them an at-bat in a game where it's 3-4-5 run lead, either side, I don't care. But to use them in a high-leverage spot as pinch hitters, when it's like, okay, we really need you, I didn't love that from old Dusty.
I felt like Dusty was trying to save face a little bit because people were pissed that they weren't in the starting lineup yesterday. And it's like, oh, my God, if I pinch hit Mauricio Dubon here instead of these guys, I'm going to get absolutely destroyed. So I'll kind of give the people what they want. But, yeah, tough spot for sure for those two.
Yeah, it's kind of teasing us more than anything else. But you mentioned the trade deadline for the Astros. You mentioned the names that they got. Trey Mancini from Baltimore, Christian Vasquez from Boston, Will Smith from Atlanta. To me, it's more what you sent in that trade, Jake Odorizzi, than what you got, Will Smith from Atlanta. But pass, fail, Astros at the deadline, what would it be?
They passed. And the letter grade yesterday for me was a B. But when I take a look at what the other contending teams did, I feel like my grade should be higher. Like, outside of the Yankees and, of course, the Padres, but in terms of the top five teams record-wise in baseball, outside of the Yankees, the Astros had the best trade deadline. They had a better deadline than the Dodgers. They had a better deadline than the Mets. They had a better deadline than the Braves. Those are the top five record teams if you include the Yankees and Astros. So, like,
yeah, the Braves got Jake Odorizzi.
They did. They
just asked Patrick Creighton. That was a massive move.
He would say they had the best trade deadline out of anybody. But, when you look at what the other teams did, like, obviously you had one of the biggest trades in MLB history with Soto and Bell going to the Padres, so you can't call it a dud trade deadline, but you didn't have the amount of moves that you usually get with contending teams. So when you compare what the Astros did to the other legitimate contenders in all of baseball, I think you should give James Click a little bit more credit than what you initially did.
And I understand you giving the Yankees credit, but the Yankees didn't get what the Yankees wanted either, because they wanted Castillo first. And they settled for Montas.
Yeah, that is true.
You know, and then they had to get bullpen help. So they got what they were trying to put Band-Aids on things, too, along the way. I don't understand yesterday, and I heard you guys talking about it a little bit, too. I don't understand the thinking of Bader for one of your starting pitchers when you know that one of your starting pitchers in Severino is having shoulder issues, may not pitch for you again this season. They're hoping he comes back. But you need and I get it, you got Montas. But I don't think you can ever have enough starting pitchers, as the Astros have shown you. And that yet they just took one of their guys, like you said, with a changeup like he has, with decent stuff, and just said bye.
I think they're trying to get Judge out of center field, even if it's like late-game situations. And maybe they don't view Jordan Montgomery as somebody who can be in the playoff rotation, kind of like you view Jake Odorizzi, somebody who cannot be in the playoff rotation for the Astros. Look, I wouldn't have done that trade if I'm the Yankees either. I'd rather have Montgomery. I'm just trying to make sense of it. A questionable move there. Padres were obviously very big, but not one of the top records in baseball, to your point.
Right, yeah, I just looked at the top five teams record-wise in baseball, and the Astros made more moves than everybody but the Yankees. And, yeah, in regards to that Yankees-Cards trade, if you're going to trade a starting pitcher, you'd think you'd be getting back an everyday player or a guy who you know is going to contribute. Like Will Smith, obviously, is not going to be an everyday player as a reliever, but he's your left-handed arm out of the bullpen whenever you need it. Harrison Bader, I think you're right, Jeremy. I think he's a defensive replacement late in game.
And he's not going to be available until September.
Yeah, and you gave up a starting pitcher to go get him. So
And you don't know if he's going to be healthy.
That's the thing. I don't care if he's back when as long as he's back by the playoffs, I don't really care. Like, the Yankees are running away with their division, like the Astros are running away with their division. So I'm fine them making moves for the postseason. But it's the if he returns. I don't care when. It's more about the if. The two things that one thing that I think worked against James Click from like a public opinion point of view was the timing of it. If he made these three trades an hour before yesterday's deadline, as opposed to 2 days or one day ahead of the deadline, and still had 24 hours to make some more moves, I think the public opinion would be a lot different.
I agree with that. That's a great point. And yeah, just because we went all of yesterday without any moves being made. Right, like if all three of those moves happened yesterday, right before the deadline, it's look what James Click did. Yep. Oh my God, he was able to pull all of this off right before the deadline. That's unbelievable.
New year,
work.
Same story, three deals in a day.
Yeah, he just look, the deals are the same regardless of when they're made, but he raised the bar with the moves happening on Monday. It's like, oh my God, we still have 24 plus hours to make all of these moves. There's still work to be done. The Astros aren't done, and Jim Crane and James Click saying they're going all in and they're being super aggressive. They're going to be true to their word, and they're going to get four or five players instead of just these three. But yesterday was a little bit underwhelming because nothing happened.
Did you see that stat, by the way? The only team in the major leagues that didn't make at least one trade was the Colorado Rockies.
Yeah.
What are they
Every
doing?
Other team made at least one move. How's that Chris Bryant move working out, too? Boy.
Yeah. Ooh, it was weird, too. They re-signed Bard. Like, instead of trading their closer Bard, who's been pretty good, because it's a name
that
was on my mind.
Too,
they
re-signed couldn't find the zone, and then he suddenly is throwing 100 again, and then you got someone that you could actually move to a team that needs him, and you said, no, you know what, we like him. Okay. Yeah.
One problem that I have, BK, and I really don't even know what side that you were on this, so I'm not nitpicking you. If I am nitpicking, then sorry, I didn't realize it, is that, like, Yeah, Josh Bell's better than Trey Mancini. Josh Bell's had a better season than Trey Mancini. The career number is Josh Bell greater than Trey Mancini. But if it means that I get rid of like an Urquidy, Garcia, Javier for a rental and Josh Bell, give me the Trey Mancini option. Yeah. I'd rather have Trey Mancini in one of those three starting pitchers than the Josh Bell, even though he's greater than Mancini.
Yeah, that's fair. You can make an argument, I think, both ways on that front. Look, in a perfect world, you would have been able to get Josh Bell without giving up one of those three or Hunter Brown or Pedro León, right? Like, you would have needed more than what you gave up to get Mancini or Christian Vasquez, obviously. But yeah, in a perfect world, you could have kept those guys, kept your top farm guys, but still found a way to get who I thought was the best option for the Astros.
We were talking earlier about Caserio went on the McAfee show. He talked about a lot of things. They had a lot of laughs. They really enjoyed each other's company. But he was talking about Davis Mills and how they had conviction. And look, I think you need conviction for every draft pick you make. So it's not like this was exclusive to only Davis Mills, where he had conviction to go out and get the Stanford quarterback. But if you had to pick one thing that you have the most conviction over when you look at the Houston Texans, what is it?
They're going to be bad. Does that count? Is that cheating?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's cheating.
All right, I'll be more specific. I think the linebackers are going to be good. Mm-hmm. Like, not just good for the Texans, like good amongst the rest of the league. I really like Kirksey and KGH. Those guys showed me a lot last year. I think Christian Harris is going to be a really good player. And also, Lovie Smith's son is the linebackers coach. So, Lovie, I feel like to make his son look good is going to give extra time to the linebacker room to make sure those guys are performing. So, I feel good about that spot. I feel really good about the rookies. I mean, if you asked me this question 2 weeks ago, I would have said John Metchie is going to be closer to Brandon Cooks than Nico Collins. Like, I thought John Metchie was going to be a freaking stud, and it sucks for so many reasons that he's not going to be out there. But I still think the rookies are going to make a pretty big impact, too. But linebacker room, like, that's the position group that I feel best about for this
team.
That's
because you like the NFL Network guys, consider Christian Kirksey to be a star.
Yeah, I don't know if I do that.
Star. Star.
I wouldn't say star for really anybody on the Texans right now. But, Kirksey is not a star. Those guys are just solid players. And
he's a veteran leader in the locker room, and that's where I'm stopping it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I think Christian Harris.
He played in Green Bay.
I do too.
I saw him every week.
Kirksey?
Not a star.
I thought Blankers had the best answer here, and I hate to give him that sort of compliment. Wow. But he talked about how like he expects the Texans to be like just competitive, right? And I think that your point speaks to that. Like, they're going to be solid in the linebacker room. The rookies are going to elevate the overall talent of the team. Upgraded head coach, even if you don't think much about Lovie Smith compared to the rest of the NFL. But I think the Texans have graduated from being a dumpster fire laughing stock of the NFL to where now you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, sort of, but not be an embarrassment at
and
all.
And it's not a
games.
Train coming to run your ass over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lovie's not going to lose you games.
Right.
Like, the Texans are going to lose games, but David Coley actively lost you games. The Patriots one comes to mind. Lovie's not going to make those mistakes that cost you games, so you feel better about being competitive.
I was selfish with your time. 10 seconds. What's coming up on the wheelhouse?
Bob Nightingale's going to join us to talk deadline.
He loves the Yankees.
Yeah, big Yankees guy. Deadline, football, sports,
stuff.
Nightingale starts he spells his name with an N-Y.
He loves him some Yankees.
Yeah. Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work. He's Blank on Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
To the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today.